State Representative Rochelle Walton Gray spent 8 years in the Missouri House, but in just one night, she might have shaken up St. Louis County politics for the foreseeable future. The Blackjack Democrat joins us next on another edition of Politically Speaking.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I think that is fair
as
to
I say. Hands to kiss and babies to shake.
But you know, I think my record speaks for itself.
That's a really good question.
Hello and welcome to the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm your host, Jason Rosenbaum, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Joining me as my guest host for the Vacationing Joe Manis, we have
Rachel Lipman.
And as our special guest today, the woman that has shook up St. Louis County politics to its core, we have as our special guest
Rochelle Walton Gray.
A state representative, a Democrat, and by January 1st, 2017, she will be the new county councilwoman for the 4th District. Welcome. This is the first time you've been on our show. We're thrilled to have you on.
Thank you so much.
Just before we get into what I was talking about in the intro, we always let our first-time guests give us a sense of who they are, why they got into politics, and just their background. So just kind of give you a chance to explain to the people who you are.
I'm Rochelle Walton Gray. I'm currently the state rep of the 75th District, which is located in North St. Louis, far North St. Louis County. I cover Blackjack, Jennings, Moline Acres, Dalewood, and unincorporated areas in between and a small part of Ferguson.
Right. You're one of, I think, three reps that have some part of Ferguson.
Yes, yes.
So that'll probably explain why you were interested in what happened after Michael Brown's death. We'll talk about it in a minute. Mm-hmm. So you come from a politically active family. Your dad, Albert Walton, was in the state house for what, 12, 14, 16 years or something
around
like that?
Around 12 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He represented, I think, a district in St. Louis City. Is that correct?
Correct.
But your stepmother was in the House in your district from 2000 to 2008, and then you ran in 2008 to succeed her. I'm just kind of interested, like, how that family dynamic kind of got you interested in politics and what that was like growing up, seeing your father in office, basically.
Yes, yes. Of course, spent a lot of time actually working my dad's law office, for mm-hmm. one, as a legal administrator. So I saw a lot of what went on during election time, but of course, as his as he went through the process of being a legislator as well, spent quite a few quite a lot of time in Jefferson City as well, visiting and yeah, it's a different place, and I've always had some interest, I guess I should say. Not per se in politics, but in activism and community activism. Was always on my student council, and even in college, got on the council there as well. So it just kind of continued on. I started my family though, and I wasn't as involved. When he moved to St. Louis County and didn't run anymore he kind of posed the question as if I were, you know, asking if I wanted to run, but I had my children, so I decided no, and he ran his wife, and she was in the office prior to me, did a great job, Juanita Walton, and after she turned out, I ran, and she was very instrumental in my after I won in getting me involved with a lot of organizations.
Now this is going to be a recurring theme, but I think there was a primary in that election. You had to run against what, two other people, I think.
In my first election,
yeah.
I think it was just one. The other person could have been
like an also ran candidate or something
right,
like that.
Right, but primarily just one opponent.
Yeah, but you won. I think you won pretty handily in that contest, and you did have another tough election in 12 when you ran against fellow incumbent Sylvester Taylor after redistricting.
Yes,
and this is again going to become a reoccurring theme. He had the support of a lot of labor unions and what I guess was seen as the more liberal or progressive candidate, not to say that you're not, but you still ended up winning again by, a pretty decisive margin. I just got to ask, do you like running in these primaries? Is it kind of like a fun spectator sport for you, or is it kind of just like annoying or something like that?
No, it's not annoying. But no, it's not fun. It's not fun. Yeah. It's whenever I think back on election campaigning, rather, it's I don't know the word to use. It's not happy thought. it's a lot of work, a lot of work. I mean, I don't take it lightly. No matter who my opponent is, I work very, very hard to make sure that I have a grassroots campaign and that I am part of the campaign. In 2008 and 2012, my canvassers never canvassed if I wasn't there. I was always there when they canvassed, or they were with me, I guess I should say.
And were you outspent in 12? Like as far, I believe Taylor had more money than you.
About $60,000 he had.
Yeah.
I usually average 20 to 30, depending on the time of year it is.
Yeah, yeah.
So how was it, do you think, obviously when you're running against an incumbent, it's not always necessarily name recognition and that they're both sort of recognized. What do you think, especially after that redistricting primary in 12, enabled you to hang on to the district despite running against somebody who was also known in the district?
I believe he didn't actually live in the district, but his house was like across the street or something like that. I think part of his district overlapped. It was a weird situation, but continue.
Yes, and of course I forgot the first part.
I mean, what is it that you point to kind of in your elections, both now for county council and then when you would win these primaries? What are some of the kind of the things you say and you emphasize that you think has kept your family's name in politics for this long?
Well, to answer his question at first, no, he didn't live in the district. He would have had to move, and no, he didn't live across the street. Even he was quite a distance, maybe a couple of 2-3 miles from me, which is quite a bit when you're not when you're running for office. He didn't live in the district.
Yeah. Not to get too in the weeds, but that happened a lot during redistricting,
where
somebody could run in another district they didn't live in as long as part of it was in. I think there was actually a lawsuit that your father spearheaded that decided that. That is a subject, though, for a whole nother podcast, but continue.
Okay, so I'll go back to, running for that race, he was considered an incumbent. We kind of split the district. For the most part, 30-30, and then I had a little bit more of the 75th in that 81st district, my old district, within the new district. I, once again, my constituents pretty much from my original district, they know me pretty well, and they are very supportive. When they see me out, they're happy to see me. So I just kind of, like I said, I always focus on them. I don't emphasize my opponent. I rarely mention them. And I don't really, when I run, I kind of get the opposite sometimes. But I just work a grassroots campaign. I didn't worry about the fact that he was considered an incumbent. I just did what I had to do to win. And yes, name recognition is always helpful.
Yeah.
It definitely. That's something to be considered. When my husband ran as well. So, yes, we didn't focus on the name. It was me, and especially in this election, and I don't know if it's okay to go into this.
Yeah, election. That was what I was going to say next. So that's a perfect transition to what happened just a few days ago. So I'll give our readers or listeners, depending on what you're doing, a little bit of background. So Councilman Mike O'Meara has been in office for a long time. His father had, I think, been in the same seat, the fourth county council district, which takes in, you know, Florissant, Hazelwood, Spanish Lake, I think Blackjack in its entirety. So a lot of North County. And what has happened over the last 10 years, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that district has gotten more and more African-American as far as population. I believe it's well over 50%. Mm-hmm. But as is the case, say, in the 13th senatorial district, you know, it's represented by a white person and a white person connected to organized labor. Now, in the 13th senatorial district, Gina Walsh is the state senator. Her situation's a little bit different. She ran in 2012 against Rhett Hudson, won pretty decisively, didn't have an opponent this time around. I think, and maybe you could correct me if I'm wrong, I think has tried to have a relationship with politicians in North County. O'Meara, though, had done some things that had made pretty much some people upset, which I'm sure you're going to get into. So what prompted you to run against him? Because it was you're terming out of the House. It was kind of a risk-free thing. But as I kind of just mentioned, it was not necessarily an easy thing to take on an incumbent, especially one that was intricately connected to organized labor like this. So what prompted you to get into the race, and what was your thought process?
My thought process primarily began with the fact that I knew I would be termed out. I thought about this a couple of years ago, actually. When you're an elected official and you really like what you do, you just don't want to stop. You know, I know in two more years I will not be an elected official. And if you are in it for positive and good reasons, you want to stay in it and you want to still be able to help people, and you try to figure out what can you do to stay in politics. And I was trying to think of, when you're a state rep, it's kind of hard to figure out where to go. And
For example, why didn't you run for the state senate instead of the county council?
Well, money. I knew that running for state senate would be even more difficult as far as not having the funds. Gina Walsh had raised a lot already, had a lot of money in her coffers already because she had ran prior to that. And then I'm sure she was accumulating because she thought she knew that she would have to run again. And so it's primarily money. And then you kind of go ahead and go along with protocol, and you know your senator's there, and you go along with protocol, and you say, well, I'll just wait, you know, if I want to run for Senate, I'll wait until she terms out, since we have term limits. So you kind of go along with protocol. So I just considered running for St. Louis County Council. And I told you before, I really didn't think about the labor issue. I knew he was a labor person. I didn't know he was an entrenched labor member or in his family. I wasn't aware of those things.
And because I just want to emphasize to our listeners, you have compiled a fairly favorable record in the legislature when it comes to organized labor. You voted against right to work. You voted against quote-unquote paycheck protection or deception or however you want to describe it. Your husband, Alan Gray, who, by the way, happens to be in the studio with us, is a former member of a labor union. So this is not a situation where it was like an anti-labor person running against a labor person. Is that correct?
Definitely not. I am not anti-labor. I'm definitely for the worker, pro-worker, and middle-income working families. I think I have actually 100% voting record with the unions. Did not support right to work. There was also the building and trades bill. That, as African Americans, we met about that bill. We met with MOCAN and the Black Caucus met. Because I have to admit, the unions are not always good to African Americans. And I definitely consider voting for that bill, or assisting, I should say. I'm maybe not voting for it, but being a co-sponsor of that bill. But in consultation with my husband, he was actually at the meeting as well. And we decided, you know, we want to support the unions if we can, and hopefully we can get them to understand that they need to include African Americans more than they have been doing, and consider their needs, because they're the workers, their needs and their issues as well.
So I'm actually going to play a clip from what you actually told me about 3 or 4 months ago, because I was asking you, basically there's been this split among African-American politicians, some African-American politicians in organized labor in St. Louis County since about 2014. There was a bill that came before the county council dealing with a percentage of work that would go to minorities and women. It kind of got wrapped up in, you know, does the contractor have to have an apprenticeship program? And it really caused a lot of consternation among political leaders. So I asked you how important you think it would be to bridge that gap before the general election, because it's going to be important for a lot of statewide candidates. Here's what you had to say.
We need to get organized labor, and African American community needs to get together and let the community pick who they want to run for office. And then organized labor needs to get behind our candidates. And they can't keep picking our candidates for our community. And it's been said time and time again that
the workers, the people who belong to the unions, have candidates that they support and want to run, but then leadership supports someone else.
Right.
And that's not fair.
I thought that was a really interesting point, and I thought it would just give you a chance to kind of elaborate on that, because I think what I don't want to put words in your mouth, but mm-hmm. I think it's part of a phenomenon in North St. Louis County politics. So kind of elaborate on what you told me a few months ago.
Yes. One thing that happens in Jefferson City, people come to our offices and they either lobby for bills or they thank us for our support. So quite often I get a lot of union members and mostly some of them, for the most part, are African-American. They send them up there, I guess. And it's probably because I'm African-American. That's who they send to my office. That's probably what's happening. And they thank me for supporting the unions. And I have to tell them, well, I support you guys because, you know, it's the right thing to do, but your unions are not supporting me. And I'm not talking about money. They just don't support me. And they're surprised and shocked. And they say, well, I don't understand that. You've been good to us. Why don't they support you? I don't, you know, that's another story, story for another time. But I don't know. And a couple of them even said to me, they need to stop doing that. We have people that we support and that support us, and they need to start letting us, meaning the union members, pick our candidates, not leadership. And I just have to agree. But I don't know. Like I said, I didn't really understand the entrenchment until more recently. Even though I had been running against union people, it wasn't as harsh, I guess I should say, as this election. It's been bad. Don't get me wrong. But I see now what they're talking about more so than them. But you have to let the community decide who they want to represent them. And that's what happens, of course, when the votes come in, that initially what happens. But they need to do that from the beginning.
Was there a particular weakness that you saw? You talked a little bit about how you got to the process of running for county council. But was there something you saw either in the way that the county council district had changed since O'Mara took office in 2000, or just from what you had seen running for office in that area that led you to think you could do this? That there was what was the in that you saw that you thought you might be able to defeat O'Mara?
You know, I really didn't think about it that way. I just wanted to run. And I knew that I know that I'm a good candidate. I know I'm a good legislator. And I communicate well with the community. I'm always with them whenever they ask me to be somewhere. So I felt that I could run and win. Yes, the demographics played into my thought process not the demographics, but the racial makeup had changed, and I knew that would help me to win.
But you also got a $25,000 donation from Senator Maria Chappelle Nadal, mm-hmm. which I think was really important because county council races don't require like hundreds of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. for ads. They basically require basically that amount to do mailers. I saw that you paid a lot of volunteers, so you mm-hmm. got boots on the ground, mm-hmm. essentially. So it seemed like when that happened, that was a big deal, even though O'Mara ended up getting like $100,000 from primarily labor unions.
Right.
Is that fair that was kind of a game changer for you?
That's what caused me to make my final decision. Although I had every other reason to run, I didn't have the funds. And it didn't make sense to run without the money that you need for just those basic things that you mentioned. So definitely, most definitely. So when she gave me the push and she said, I want to see you as an African-American woman win this election, and I want to donate to you, that's what helped.
Obviously, Senator Chappelle Nadal did not beat Lacey Clay. Lacey Clay won pretty decisively, but I think she did donate to a bunch of candidates, and Rachel, you can kind of back me up on this, who ended up winning. So her legacy of that race, while she personally lost, will have consequences, as we kind of mentioned.
This may kind of take this in a direction where not quite ready to go yet, but we've been talking about sort of Maria Chappelle Nadal's contributions to the city races. And what do you see as opportunities for cooperation between the city and the county now that Stanger, where there is a little bit more animosity between Steve Stanger and Mayor Slay than there was between Charlie Dooley and Mayor Slay? What are the opportunities now that Stanger has to, you know, work with the council to maybe for greater cooperation? What are the opportunities there?
Yes, I see great opportunity there. Once again, I was I have great relationships with many of the city elected officials. Most of us who live in the county now, we grew up in the city and we have a connection with those people. We don't want to just leave the city and not have any type of interaction or relationship or commonality. And yes, I think there should be more cooperation. A lot of the city officials did support me because as in the legislature, we try to support one another. If they need a particular piece of legislation, we try to support it and vice versa, especially as African Americans. We really need to work together on what issues we have common ground on. So I see that as being good.
So to not bury the lead any further, you defeated Mike O'Meara, I believe, 61% to 39%. Your husband also won his race by a pretty wide margin. Mm-hmm. What do you think caused that victory? Because I have some theories. Could be the demographics finally caught up with O'Meara. It could be his sponsorship of the renter's bill that caused some controversy. Could just be that, you know, sometimes when someone's in there for a while and a viable challenger, you know, goes up against them, people vote for change. Those are some of my theories. What do you think was behind your victory?
You know, I really was surprised about the margin. I did not expect that. So I don't know. But although he had been there for so long, 16 years, I think it was.
Yep, 16.
People just didn't know who he was. He just did not have that connection. Maybe where he lived, I guess they knew him more so or had a better connection. One of the state reps said he was a good county council person. But where I live in the district I represent, because like you said, there was redistricting. So I used to represent another area. So if you add that to what I have now, I represented probably half of that district at a time. So my name was known, and the district that I lost, which was well, the part of the district that I lost through redistricting, were some of my best constituents. They contacted me often. They supported me a lot, and I think that helped that I had also had represented half of the district, and they saw me more. They were more they had a better connection, I guess is the word, with me than they did with Mr. O'Meara. And they just felt that he was not accessible. Many people just said, I just cannot reach my county council person. Something that was mentioned in another interview that I had is a lot of the county is unincorporated.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no one else to go to. They had no city council person. They only had his office or the county council or the county executive's office to reach out to. And when you're not getting any assistance, and you can't solve everyone's problem, and I don't want to make anyone think that that's my intention to solve everyone's problem, because that's impossible. But I will very much be accessible. You will be able to reach me, and I will contact you back and someone from my office. We will do the best that we can. Mm-hmm. But when you feel like you're not getting any access, that's disheartening.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the impact going further and why I think your win is so important. So I follow county council dynamics pretty closely. And even though it's a 5-2 majority for the Democrats, it's kind of deceiving. Because oftentimes, as we saw during the Charlie Dooley administration, when a block of those Democrats no longer support the county executive and they join with the two Republicans, you can't do anything on the council anymore. That, I think, is one of the many reasons why Charlie Dooley lost re-election, is that he couldn't push things through the council anymore and had more and more contentious council meetings, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
When Steve Stanger became county executive, he basically had a de facto 6-1 majority on the council because the two Republicans, Colleen Wassinger and Mark Harder, often joined with O'Meara, Kevin O'Leary, Dolan and Page to vote on most things. The odd person out usually was Hazel Irby, who is a councilwoman from University City. As time went on, the two Republicans often voted against Stenger with Irby, so it became 4-3 as time went on. So the fact that O'Meara is gone now and has been replaced by somebody who I would not classify you as an ally of Steve Stenger at all. He no longer has a functioning majority on that council for controversial things. Mm-hmm. And that's going to make his life a lot more difficult if he wants to put something that's controversial. I say controversial because most things pass through the council unanimously. But when you're talking about big policy changes that upset some people, it divides a little bit more. So that's my backdrop. Mm-hmm. What do you see going forward is going to be the reality for Steve Stenger once you join the council?
Well, definitely will not support things that don't help our community, which is North St. Louis County, and then, of course, the entire county as well. But I don't want to be too antagonistic towards Stenger, but I will support my community at all times. The minority contract bill, you know, that supports my community. That bill was good for my community. The rental landlord-tenant bill was not good for my community. And that's where my allegiance lies. It's not with Stenger and it's not with anyone else. It's with my constituents. And whatever they want me to do or ask me to do, that's what I would try to do.
Are there issues where you hope that now that there is this new sort of four to three split, I don't think neither Jason or I is implying that you're automatically going to vote against Stenger or just simply to be antagonistic, as you put it. But what issues would you like to see him now that there is more need for negotiation to come to the table on? Where would you like him to say, hey, let's talk about this rather than just maybe saying, I'm going to put this through because I can?
Definitely the minority contract bill. That was very important to us. I actually got support from small businesses because they recognized that that's where they're small businesses, and they started even smaller, and they realized that they needed to support their minority small businesses as well. And I got a lot of support from them coming to me, letting me know that what happened that day, which I wasn't there, of course, was a travesty. When that bill didn't pass and the vote that occurred that day.
And what I see, too, is maybe not that this four-person block, if they can stay together on the issue, is going to defeat Stenger's initiatives. It basically is leverage for him to come to the table. If you have a problem with something, or if Hazel Irby has a problem with something, or if Harder Wasinger. Or Wasinger have a problem with something, and you can get four votes to defeat it, you basically can go to him and say, you got to change it or we're going to basically vote it down. Is that basically what you think could happen from now on?
Yes, and being in the legislature, I understand that process. When I first got there, we were not in a super minority. We were just in the minority. We got a lot more done. They had to work with, the Republicans had to work with the Democrats. We had to discuss things. We had to hash things out. The only time I saw that happen when we became the super minority was in with the education transfer bill. That was the only time we sat down, two groups of people, and had to work it out. So yes, if it's close like this, most of the times you will have to sit down with all concerned parties and determine how you can come to a agreement. So I totally understand their process, and I know how that would work.
I do want to just ask, what is kind of your relationship with Hazel Irby? Because, you know, she's her own political woman, so to speak. You're your own person. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have a good relationship, or what's kind of your relationship like? Because that could be crucial to if you can do this four-person block that I mentioned.
Yes, we do. We have a good relationship. She's actually been friend of the family prior to her election. She was part of our team, I guess you could say, and we worked together. I wasn't running for office then, but I was part of the campaign teams at that time, and we helped her get elected. So we have a good relationship. We kept it, especially because we both are in this area, so we see each other from time to time. Of course, our relationship has, since she ran for, when Dooley ran for office the last time and she ran, we became a little bit, our relationship grew a little more, and it's growing more and more with my running now.
I just mentioned that because she and O'Mara did not really get along very much, and I think that she was pretty happy with the result on Tuesday. In the legislature, you sponsored a lot of bills kind of dealing with the aftermath of the Michael Brown shooting, trying to impart training on law enforcement. I think I remember you sponsored like literally several dozen bills. You were one of the more prolific bill sponsors on that. You, I'm sure, were very frustrated when many of those bills didn't get hearings, let alone get serious consideration. And, you know, that might have been because you were in the super minority, that they wanted to mm-hmm. focus on, like, Senate Bill 5 rather than anything else. So now you're coming into this St. Louis County, the epicenter of where Ferguson happened. And I don't know if there really has been a lot of policymaking on that level about how to move forward after Michael Brown's shooting death. With your expertise in the legislature and your experience and the fact that you are going to be in a position where you're not outnumbered anymore, is that an issue that you think you'll dive pretty deeply into and try to effectuate policy change on a county level?
Most definitely. Right, you were right. It was difficult to do anything for various reasons, and we won't go into all that, like you said. But... I had a lot of bills that were not like anti-police bills or anti-law enforcement bills, but they were just legislation to try to heal our community and build better relationships and bridge the gap between law enforcement and our young people. And so there was some what I call community-based policing bills just to get more police officers, foot patrol and patrol the communities and get to know the people who live there. So a lot of our police officers just don't live where they work. And I mean, good or bad, they should at least attempt while they are there to get to know the people that they have to protect. Had municipal court reform bills that was actually filed prior to the Michael Brown incident, knowing, but having my knowledge of the issues that occur when people are getting traffic tickets and cannot pay their fines and having warrants issued.
But from what I understand, you were skeptical of the final outcomes of those bills because they exactly. ended up, there was that dual cap that St. Louis County had 12.5%, the rest of the state had 20%, mm-hmm. among other things. Is that correct?
I was. I didn't appreciate the differential that was made on that cap because you don't punish everybody for what a few people did or a few, you know. Cities did. But I know that my constituents were probably happy, but you don't want to bankrupt your city, and that would make it even worse on you. So there just needed to be some reform done at these courts and cities. With regard to traffic violations. So
my last question for you, and this was the question I was trying to think of before. So I think this will be the first time two African Americans have been on the council at the same time. So that means 2 out of 7 will have representation as opposed to just being the Hazel Irvy seat mm-hmm. or the Charlie Dooley seat. Mm-hmm. What do you think that's going to mean for the African American community in St. Louis County, which is 25% of the population, but oftentimes just didn't have a lot of representation on the council? Even when Hazel Irvy was there with the Stanger situation, she was often kind of the voice in the wilderness as opposed to somebody who could actually, you know, effectuate policy change. What do you think that means for the council, that it's getting more diverse racially?
Oh, it means a lot. We're finally, as they say, have a seat at the table. My constituents, her constituents, will be well represented. Both of us have done, I think, pretty good jobs at representing our community so far. And especially, I can speak for myself, of course, I especially intend to continue what I've tried to do, but hopefully can now actually have some impact on my community. And once again, I just like for them to let me know what they need. Let me know what you need, because I've been at the state level and not didn't function as much on the local level. But let me know, and we'll work with Hazel and whoever else I can to see what we can do to change some things. Some things are not changeable. Some things are just annoyances that can't be changed, but some things are possible.
Well, we look forward to you taking your seat after January 1st, 2017, I think, is when you get inaugurated. Mm-hmm. It's going to certainly make the council meetings a little bit more interesting for the media to cover, especially when something that requires some negotiation comes before us. Thank you very much for coming on such short notice. I know that you and your husband deserve a well-deserved rest after Election Day. For all of our stories, stlpublicradio.org. Follow me on Twitter at @JRosenbaum. Follow Rachel on Twitter at
@RLipman, 2 P's and 2 N's.
I know that I don't think you're on Twitter, but is there any way to get a hold of you, like a website or Facebook or anything like that?
Yes, I have a website. Vote4, Rochelle Gray is my website, and a Facebook page, of course, and I guess email if you want to catch me. Email me.
Yeah.
But all of that is on the website. All of that information.
Very good. We'll be back next time. Until then, so long.